Right, welcome to handout three of 1B structures. We're going to be now looking at elastic structural analysis. So, in first year course, almost everything you came across was statically determinate. That meant we could use equilibrium alone, and it was possible to find all the forces in all the members. So, here's a nice example of that. If we had a lean-to truss like this and we applied 100 newtons over here, that would be bow force T1, that would be bow force T2, this is 45 degrees in the middle. Nice and easy to calculate what's going on here. We can write equations in each of the two directions, horizontally and vertically. And if we want to write these equations in matrix form, we can write them like this, times T1, T2 is equal to 100, naught. So we can do all these things and we can discover exactly what T1 is, exactly what T2 is, nice and simple. This equilibrium matrix is square, non-singular. There will be a unique solution for any possible loading. Nothing can go wrong, but when we have a statically indeterminate truss, things are a bit different. So if we now add another member over here, and we still apply 100 newtons to this little truss, what now? Before we even start the solution, I would like you to think about what the probable outcome will be. We're applying 100 newtons perpendicular to that bar, and I'd like you to think in advance what you think the final solution might look like before doing all the sums. But the final solution will drop out whether or not you think about this correctly or not. So we will have T1, T2, T3, and 100 newtons. And of course what we can do is we can write exactly the same sorts of equations as before. This time we'll have three terms because we've got three bar forces in that matrix multiplied by the forces in the members equals 100 naught. But as you would have spotted, three unknowns, only two equations. So these equations do not have a unique solution, and the state of the structure cannot be found by equilibrium alone. So we need to do something else, and we need to consider compatibility, which is what we'll come to. But we can still do things with this by using Gaussian elimination. Let's presume, by the way, that 1 over root 2 is 0.7. We'll make that very simple assumption so that we have simple numbers to work with. So if we take that assumption and put it in over here, multiplied by the set of bar forces equals 100 naught, what we can do with Gaussian elimination, we can, for instance, replace the second equation with the second equation minus the first equation, which would be that thing there. But that's then as far as we can go. We can't go any further with Gaussian elimination. That is it. So we now need to look for two solutions to go any further. We need a particular solution, that's an equilibrium with the applied load, and then we need another solution, which is called a homogeneous solution, and in structures jargon we call this a state of self-stress. And if we find this solution, we can add as much of it or as little of it as we like to this particular solution, because there are an infinite number of solutions which will satisfy equilibrium. But actually there's only one of those solutions which is the correct solution, which also satisfies compatibility. So that's the point. That's what we're going to be working on. So a particular solution, that the first part of the things that we need to discover. A particular solution can be found by setting the value of T3 equal to 0. So let's start by saying T3 doesn't exist, a bit like our initial solution we had in the very first example we had. So we'll take it to be 0. It could be any value, but 0 is a nice value to use. The second equation now becomes, this is in the little matrix in the previous page, now it becomes T2 is equal to minus 100, T1 is 140 newtons. You'll recognize this solution from the very first solution that we did. So this is a particular solution. It's not necessarily the correct solution, including compatibility, but it is a particular solution because it is in equilibrium with the loads. Okay, so a state of self-stress can be found by solving the same equations with 0 on the right-hand side. If we set T3 to 0 this time, that would be pointless. Everything would end up 0. So now let's set T3 to unity, to value of 1, and see what happens in terms of a back substitution. So if we take that second equation after the Gaussian elimination again, and in this point we make the bar force 3 a value 1, We plug that in, we will find that T2 is equal to minus 1.4. And if we plug that into the top equation, T1 becomes 1. And that means that what we now have is we have a system of self-stress for the equilibrium equations. And it's given by this. So whenever the bar forces, whenever the bar force in number 1 is 1, then in terms of self-stress, in number 3 it must be 1, and in number 2 it must be minus 1.4. And what that means is that the complete solution is the particular solution plus some portion or proportion of the state of self-stress, which we don't yet know. We will write it as this: the bar force, the set of bar forces, is equal to a particular solution of bar forces plus some amount of the self-stress system. And we don't know what that value x is. That's what we need to discover. So, how do we do that? Well, just to recap, that's our particular solution, 140, naught, and minus 100. In other words, it's pushing from left to right. And in the self-stress system, it's 1, 1, and minus 1.4. In other words, that bar force pushing in. And I hope you can feel that that is in perfect equilibrium as a self-stress system. So what we now do is we substitute T equals T naught plus X times S, as we discussed before. And this part over here, these are now the extensions in each bar. Remember, the extension generically is given by the force times the length divided by AE. You remember that from first year structures. Well, we now have different lengths for each member. So L over AE is generic, but bar 1 and bar 3 are root 2 times L, whereas bar 2 is 1. So this part, this is our flexibility matrix over here, and we need to multiply that by our bar forces, which we know to be a particular solution, plus x times some self-stress system. So that's where that equation comes from, and we can simplify it, and it becomes this thing over here. So at this point, you can try question 1 of example sheet 2-3. We're now going to apply virtual work. Virtual work is incredibly useful in this particular situation, as it always is. Because, remember, virtual work on the left-hand side, this is the energy dissipation. On the right-hand side, that's the external work done by the loads. So, this is just recapping what I just said a couple of pages back. The bar forces are simply given by the flexibility matrix multiplied by the bar forces. So, we now have a set of extensions. We want to make sure that they're compatible. However, we know nothing about the external displacements of the joint. If we use as a virtual equilibrium system a state of self-stress, then the problem disappears, as every external displacement is multiplied by zero load. This is the beauty of virtual work. The external work done will be zero. So in other words, the self-stress system multiplied by the extensions in the bars must equal zero. So all we now do, from the bottom of page 64, the value of S that we had, which is that, the self-stress system, multiplied by the extensions that we discovered at the top of page 66, we set that equal to zero. And what we can do is we just walk across and we just multiply these matrices together. So 1 multiplied by L over AE into 200 plus 1.4x plus minus 1.4 times L over AE into minus 100 minus 1.4x plus 1 times L over AE times naught plus 1.4x must equal 0. Take my word for it, that's the equation that you get from what I've just said. X turns out to be minus 70 newtons. And what that means is we can now put it back into this equation. We now know that the particular solution needs to have a value of x, minus 70 newtons, multiplied by the self-stress system to give us the correct solution, which is compatible. And that's what it tells us. It tells us that the central bar force is zero, and we have 70 there and 70 there. And I hope that you might have thought in advance that that might be a sensible outcome for that particular structure. And we can also then work out that the extensions are in every bar. The extensions are simply the flexibility matrix multiplied by the bar forces, and that tells us that equation there tells us exactly what the extensions are in every single member. Now, this is all very well for one redundancy. What happens when we have more redundancies? First thing to discover is how many redundancies we have in any sort of structure we have, and we use either common sense or we can use Maxwell's equation. So I'm going to show you both, as it were, using the same example. Maxwell's equation says that the redundancies that we have minus the number of mechanisms we have, the mechanisms add is zero. If we don't have a mechanism, which we hope not to have, of course, in structural engineering. So generally speaking, that's taken to be zero. So the number of redundancies we have, S, is given by the number of bound forces we have minus D times J minus R. It's written as plus R minus DJ, but it's easier to think of it, I think, as minus DJ minus R. So what's DJ? DJ is the number of equations we can write at each joint, and for a two-dimensional structure, D is 2. So it's twice the number of joints, and then R, that's the number of restraints that we have at each joint. In other words, if we have a restraint, the pin connection, for instance, is restrained in two directions, it's a value 2 for that particular joint, and we sum them all up. So what are the principles we're using? Equilibrium, compatibility, material laws. Right, now, this process that we're about to describe is called the force method, and you'll hear that phrase all over the place. That is what we're applying. It's because the member forces are taken as the primary unknowns. So, process to go through. You need to remind yourself of what we've just been through for that very simple indeterminate truss with a redundancy of 1. And this is now extending it into a generic sense. So identify the number of redundancies, N. Find a general solution for the bound forces in equilibrium. Find a particular set of bound forces, T0. That's what we did, if you remember. For each indeterminate CI, find a set of bound forces in equilibrium with zero applied load. We did that, but now we need to do it several times, depending on how many redundancies we have. Write the general equilibrium solution, T, as being the particular solution, T naught, plus unknown amounts, xi, of each of the states of self-stress. So before, we stopped there with one redundancy. Of course, all that happens now is we just add in a bunch of terms. That's really the only difference between what we've just done and a far more complex structure. Find the extensions of each bar. The extensions of each bar is the flexibility matrix multiplied by the forces in the bars, plus any initial lack of fit. That's E naught. And that happens on construction sites all the time. Bars will come on site, truss members will arrive on site, and they're not the right length. So this is a very important practical part, which we're going to include in an example, which we'll see in a second. So E, then, is given by this thing if we multiply out all of the self-stress systems and the particular solution. Then we find the amount of each state of self-stress required to ensure that the structure fits together in terms of being compatible. We apply virtual work. S times E is equal to naught, but now we have a series of equations which must equal naught, more than one, because we have more than one redundancy. And there will be N simultaneous equations, and we can solve them, and we find the values of X. Once the values of X have been found, then we plug them into these two equations to discover what our bar forces are and what the extensions in our bars are. So just remember that I said that. I'll refer back to that when we get to the end of the example. So on page 266 of these notes, remember we're going to use those two equations right towards the end of the coming example. So here is the example. We have a statically indeterminate truss, shown on the next page, and in addition, it's being loaded, but in addition, it's also arrived on site, and EF, bar EF, is initially too long by alpha times L. So EF should have been a length L, it's arrived, it's 1 plus alpha times L. It's alpha L too long. So what have we got? Here's the truss that we have. This is the length, this is the member EF, which is a bit too long. EF is being pulled down by W. And we have all of these bar forces. So they're numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Try and remember that in your mind. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And we have W pulling down at F. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 joints. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bars. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4 joints, which are restrained in two directions. Okay, so remember that. And the other two are free to move. All right, so let's apply Maxwell's equation to this. So Maxwell's rule will tell us that the number of redundancies are given by the number of bar forces minus twice the number of joints plus the number of of restraints we have. We've got 6 bars, we've got 2 times 6 joints, and we have 4 times 2 restrained joints. That means it's 2. Well, actually, it was blindingly obvious it was 2, frankly, because if we had looked at that that structure without using any form of equation, we would have said to ourselves, yeah, that looks redundant. But if I took away this member 5 and I took away that member 6 and I just got left with that structure in the middle being pulled down, then that structure, BEFC, that is a statically determinate structure. And in other words, if I've taken away 2 bars to get to a statically determinate structure, then it must have been redundant to 2. it's got a redundancy of 2. So we can either do it using an equation, or you can do it using Maxwell's rule. It's entirely up to you. One other thing I should point out, it will be very sensible to remove the 2 that I've just said we could remove to do that. What would not be sensible would be to remove 5 and 4, because it would be left with 1 dangling member which could rotate, in other words, a mechanism, and then another part of the structure which was still indeterminate. So that wouldn't have been a wise thing to do. But removing in your mind 5 and 6 would have been a sensible thing to do. Okay, so take your pick. Use common sense or use Maxwell's rule. It's entirely up to you. So now what we need to do, we need to find a set of forces in equilibrium with applied load. And if we set T5 equal to T6 equal to 0, we can find the other bar forces by joint equilibrium. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. So this will give us a particular solution. So we're going to start with this. We're going to say that T5 is equal to 0. If it's equal to 0, of course, those 2 bars must be 0. If that one's 0, of course, that one's 0. It's the same bar. And that's 0. And therefore, for horizontal equilibrium, that must be 0. And therefore, all we're left with is vertical equilibrium, W and W. So that's crystal clear. So that's the set of bar forces we have. Most of them are 0. One of them is W. So the particular solution we have is 0, 0, W, 0, 0, 0. That's what we have in terms of a particular solution. Now we need to find 2 self-stress systems, one by one. We're going to start with bar number 5, this one. And what we're going to do is we're going to put its value equal to 1, and we're going to simultaneously put number 6 equal to 0, because we're going to do it separately in a second. So if we put this one equal to 1, we have a self-stress system at this joint, which tells us that is 1 over root 2, and that's minus 1 over root 2. That's easy enough. We transfer the 1 over root 2 to this side. If that's 1 over root 2 and that's 0, then clearly that must be pulling up by 1 over root 2, and that must be pushing down by 1. So we can discover, if we know that that's 1 and that's 0, we can discover the other internal forces, and that becomes S1. So S1 is that matrix, that self-stress system, based on number 5 being 1. We can do exactly the same thing with number 6 being 1 and number 5 now being 0. So that's important. So if that's 0, then that's 0 and that's 0, clearly. And if that's 0, then that's 0. And if that's 0, then if that's 1, then that's 1. And if that's 1 and that's 1, then this must be pushing down by root 2, okay, in a vertical direction. So that's all easy enough. So again, we can write down what S2 is. So S2 is simply that equation where we have put initially T6 equal to 1. So all possible sets of bar forces in equilibrium with the applied loads are given by this. We've written that down in the past. And now at this point, you'll see that on page 72 and 73, there's an alternative approach that you could look at. Please read these notes by all means in your own time. You can ignore them if you like. You can read them if you like, if you're interested. It just gives you an alternative approach, which might help you. If you're struggling, perhaps it might help you to put things in a different perspective. So do what you like with pages 72 and 73. The material law, which we're going to use, we know that the extension that we'll have on any member will be given by the flexibility matrix multiplied by the set of bar forces plus any initial lack of fit lack of fit in any bar member. And the extension in any bar, therefore, is given by that as the extended version for this particular example of that equation there. Right, so what does that mean? That means this. This is just writing out that equation again in a long form. There is our flexibility matrix. There is our particular solution. There is our X1 times our self-stress system. There's our X2 times our second self-stress system. And there is the addition of the lack of fit, the initial extension of member EF. So that's how that equation actually looks. Now, in terms of using virtual work, we know that S1 times E must equal 0 and S2 times E must equal 0. These are the two equations that we're going to solve. S1, we know it's stated on previous pages. E is on the previous page I've just shown you. And we can put that equal to 0, multiplying it all out, and we have to multiply all the terms across the matrix. So you go line 1, multiply everything out, plus everything multiplied in line 2, plus everything multiplied in line 3, all the way down all 6 lines, and you'll come up with some great equation for that and some great equation for that. Those equations are written in your notes in page 74. I haven't put them in the notes here. They are written in your notes in page 74. I want you to go through those equations carefully to demonstrate that you can find exactly, that you can do exactly that. All right, so that is those two equations. If you go through those equations and you then solve those two equations simultaneously, you'll get values for X1 and for X2 in terms of W and the initial lack of fit, the value of alpha. You then take those equations and you plug them in to the, remember I told you before to remember the two equations a few pages back, for the total force T, the bar forces, T remember is given by this thing, the particular solution plus X1 times the self-stress plus X2 times the second self-stress. If you plug these solutions into this equation, you will discover that will give us the bar forces in all the bars, and you will also discover exactly what the extensions in all the bars from this equation, because we know that E is equal to the flexibility matrix multiplied by the bar forces plus the initial lack of fit, and therefore you'll discover exactly what the bar forces are in every member. If this feels complicated to you, it is complicated to go through it and work through it and see it for the first time. Of course it is. This is all about practice. Actually, the concepts here are really rather simple. It's a question of practice, practice, practice. So please look at the example sheet.